The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
We're working on a series on love based on the wisdom of the Torah and the Kabbalah. And since we've had a couple of bumps on the way, a couple of talks that we weren't able to do, so I'm going to do a little bit of review, and I hope it won't be too much review for those of you who've been with us, for those of you who are new with us. I'm sure that'll be no problem. But essentially, the Kabbalah starts off with a simple point, which is the purpose of creation is to reveal divine oneness. And that divine oneness, and this we went to great lengths to explore, is really love. When we love each other and when we love God, then we are fulfilling our purpose in creation, and that is the simple formula of Judaism. There are only two things that really matter. Everything else is commentary, which is to learn to love each other and to learn to love and feel loved by God. The rest is commentary. But as simple as that is to say, it is not as simple to do. There are many steps that one needs to take in order to successfully love. And it's interesting when you take a little cross-section of culture, music, theater, film, poetry. Mankind has been obsessed with love and romance. It is a theme that just returns over and over again. Just another little silly love song, but yet another silly little love song. Goes on and on and on. And yet, with all the talk about love, how successful are we at love? How many marriages are really thriving? I recently heard a statistic that out of the marriages that are still intact, those marriages have reported of something like 85% are emotionally divorced. I mean, that's unbelievable. So we're talking about not the ones that actually are divorced, but even the marriages that are sticking in there, you know, hanging in there. The statistics are saying that people are describing themselves as emotionally divorced from their spouse. And this is just absolutely terrible. If we look at the family structure, parent-children relationship, children-parent relationship, it's just all across the board, although what seems to so matter to us all is love, it seems that love remains somewhat a mystery. How does one truly, truly love? I once read a book by a psychologist, and his theory was that really all our problems are rooted in the simple formula of how much love did we get growing up. Now, I'm not saying that I completely agree with him, but I do believe there's much to the point. Love is what makes the world go round, because that is, in fact, the purpose of the universe. God created the universe to manifest His oneness, which is synonymous with saying to make manifest the power of love, which is to give of your goodness to another. And the Kabbalah starts off by saying that in the beginning all of existence was endless light. What is this endless light? Endless manifestation of God. Light is revelation. Light hints to a symbolic of revelation, illumination. And that light is the light of divine oneness. So a matter of speaking, we could say that really in the beginning all of existence was endless love. And when the divine wanted to create you and me, when the divine wanted to make love actualized, so it says that God removed His light from the center, creating a space, creating room for other. Within that room, within that space within Himself, so to speak, God created vessels, vessels which are just the opposite of light. Light extends, light projects, vessels contain, vessels receive. And the Kabbalah then says that God projected a thin ray of this endless light into the vessels, but the vessels couldn't take the light and broke down. And Rav Nachman of Breslov, the great Hasidic master, teaches that if we were to deeply understand this simple metaphor, which is in Kabbalah is referred to as the Tzimtzum, the doctrine of the divine withdrawal and concentration or condensation, we would have the secrets to everything in life. Because essentially in that little story that I shared, really are all the dynamics of love. The first step in loving is to move yourself out of the center, just as God, so to speak, moved himself out of the center and created a space within his light, within his presence, for beings other than himself. And so too, when we are born, in the beginning is just me. But if I'm going to successfully emulate the divine, whose image I've been created in, then I have to learn to move me out of the center and create a space for being other than myself so that I can move from me to we. And that is the major challenge of growing up. And it doesn't seem to let up as time goes on. Learning to make space for other people in your life. Learning to make space in your space. Learning to make space in your time. Learning to make space in your schedule. Learning to make space in your philosophy for other opinions, other philosophies. Learning to make space within your personality for other types of personalities. So the Kabbalah teaches us, and it's a fundamental concept in Judaism in general, that love is a balance between two simple powers. One is to respect borders, and the other, which is called kindness, which is to give. Justice is respecting boundaries and borders, and kindness is giving of yourself to another person. Giving to them, however, in a way that you do not infringe and undermine their self, their boundaries, their borders. So the first step is din. The first step is justice, creating this boundary, moving yourself out of the center and creating the space for being other than yourself. We also see in the story that God not only created a space within himself, within his presence, his light, for otherness, these vessels, but these vessels break down, which tells us that these vessels were imperfect. So it's not only creating a space for a being that's other than yourself, but it's creating a space for a being that is other and imperfect, flawed. In addition, the Kabbalah teaches, not only did these vessels were imperfect and flawed and weren't able to take the light, but they break down. In other words, love is creating a space not only for being other than yourself, not only for a being that is flawed, but making space in your life for breakdowns, for problems, for chaos, for conflict. That is the beginning of love. And that is a first step that many people don't even get to, because they just can't make that space. They're not willing to. They're so self-centered that they can't put anyone else in the center of their lives but themselves, because they're afraid if they're not in the center, then they will lose their self-worth. But Judaism teaches that the more you move yourself out of the center and create within yourself a place, room for others, and put others in the center. And that, unfortunately, is one of the problems that very often happens when people go into therapy. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying therapy is bad. But if therapy constantly revolves around me, 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 the whole reason you have problems is you're too me conscious. And there's too much of a me that I'm concerned about. But when I move myself out of the center and I'm concerned about somebody else, very often, problems will solve themselves because the me will be more balanced. Now, please take that with a grain of salt, because obviously I do believe therapy can be helpful But when I meet people and the therapy they describe to me is one that consistently revolves just around themselves, that's not the solution. That is the very problem. The problem is they're self-centered. They're too self-aware, self-conscious. They got to get a little distracted from themselves and get outside themselves. In fact, recently I met a fellow who's had a consistent history of depression. He went to a great rabbi who was very, I don't want to use the word psychic, but certainly deeply intuitive. And my friend walked into the room, and this man immediately started describing things about himself without even knowing him. And one of the things he said is, oh, you've been carrying your depression since childhood. And the fellow was shocked that he could see this without even having even a moment's discussion. And he said, well, what do I do about it? And the rabbi said, you just think too much. Stop thinking too much. Stop analyzing too much. And this friend shared this with me and then said, listen, rabbi, let's do a little learning. So I said, well, pick a topic. He said, well, I'd like to talk about meditation. I said, meditation? The rabbi just told you, right? That's not what you need to go inside yourself more, right? You got to get outside yourself more. And so love starts with moving ourselves out of the center, creating space for being other than ourselves, a being that we recognize and accept as being imperfect, and a situation that we accept is going to be filled with ups and downs, breakdowns, conflict, problems, chaos. If you're ready to make that space in your life for being other than yourself who is flawed, if you're ready to make a space in your life for challenges, then you've taken the first step to love. But I want to better understand and deeper understand what it means to make a space for a being other than yourself. How other is other? Well, first other is, a man makes space in his life for a woman, and a woman makes a space in her life for a man. That alone is a huge accomplishment, because men and women are extremely different. Judaism considers men and women of equal importance, of equal value, equally loved in the eyes of God, and equally able to be of service, to make manifest God's presence on earth. Equal, but different. Very, very different, but equal. How do you create a space in your life for someone that you must respect equal to yourself, and yet is so completely different than you? And we're not even talking about personality yet. We have to create a space in our life for the opposite sex. We also have to create a space in our life for the opposite sex who does not have your personality. There are no two people in the world that have the exact same personality. In fact, my wife shared this with me when she was, many years ago, very involved in the study of astrology. So she was challenged by a concept called astrological twins. Because two people are born at the same time in the same place are of the same astrological map, which would then suggest that they, not suggest, that would mean that they have the same character makeup. So my wife asked her teacher, who was quite a successful teacher here in Israel, and her teacher said, astrology says nothing about the soul. It only talks about the character. The soul comes into the world, and it's given a character, but what you do with that character is your choice. So you could have five children, each given five crayons the same color, but every kid will come up with a completely different expression of himself, even though they start with the very same colors. So too, even though there are personality types, there are no soul types. And each and every one of us makes a choice what we want to do with the personality colors that we've been blessed with. And so there are simply no two people alike in the world. And if we're to love another person, one needs to be able to be a master of the art of making room for otherness. Other sexually, other gender, other personality, as well as other than our dreams. One of the constant problems that people have in relationships is they project their dreams on people. In fact, a friend recently shared with me something that she said that is constantly happening to her, that she dates men, and it's not because the men are misrepresenting themselves. She just simply projects on them what she wants to see and what she's hoping they're going to be, and later on she realized they're not. It's something that we tend to do. I mean, I find it so amazing. I had a fellow who was an accountant for Israelite for about 12 years, but he lived in an area where I never visited, and where whenever I would come into the United States, he wasn't able to get to any of my classes, so we actually never saw each other. We had a relationship over the phone for 12 years, and I remember when we finally met after 12 years, how shocked I was to see him. He's not at all what I pictured him to be, but what was really shocking is, why did I ever picture him to be anything? I immediately had a picture in my mind of what he looked like, even though I had never met him, just based on his voice, and I guess what I thought I'd like him to look like, and he didn't look remotely at all, nothing at all to what I had imagined him to always look like. We just live with much expectations, much projections, and this is a constant challenge. What happens in marriages is it's not uncommon that people get married and suddenly realize a day, a week, a year, a month, a year, that you're not at all the person I thought I married. Well, that's not necessarily that person's fault. Maybe that was because you really didn't make that space in your life and truly create a love opening for this person. We also have to make a space not only for someone who's other than our gender, other than a personality, other than our dreams, other than our projections, expectations. We also have to make a space for a person who is other than anyone else we've ever experienced. See, it's also not uncommon that people come to relationships with baggage, with assumptions that all people are this way, or that the kinds of relationships they had in the past is the same kinds of things. If you have an issue with trusting people, well then immediately you assume that this person can't be trusted either. If you have problems with intimacy, then you immediately assume that this person is like everyone else you've ever met. This person is not at all like anyone you have ever met. You need to create a space in your life for someone who is genuinely other than your gender, other than your personality, other than your projections, and other than anyone you've ever experienced. I find it so incredibly annoying when someone says, "I know you." Right? Nobody knows me except my maker, God. Nobody knows me. I don't know me because I'm a work in process. And so I'm constantly changing also. There is definitely a core, a stable core, but there's so much change that's going on. And therefore, we need to come and create a space, a room. Love is creating that space for someone other than anyone you ever met. And any category of people you've met. I don't know if I shared with you this story, but there was a singles event in Yerushalayim in Jerusalem for singles all over the world. And I met with a friend who was also not married, and he told me about this, and since I've always had a warm spot in my heart for the world of singles and always hope to be of help, so I said, I'd very much like to see what this conference is about, and maybe I could learn, maybe it can be of help. So he said, okay, let's go. So this conference was at the King's Hotel in Jerusalem. We arrived at the hotel. This fellow is in like his mid-40s, a very eligible bachelor. And we walk into the lobby, and we approach a woman there and say, excuse me, is this where the International Singles Conference is being held? And the woman he asked this question. The woman looks at him and says, well, you're late. With this, like, disgust. And he says, well, what do you mean I'm late? I mean, I didn't know. I just found out about it this morning. If you really cared, she said, then you would have known about this a long time ago, and you would have made plans to show up on time. Clearly, it's not important. And I could not believe my eyes and ears. Here are two perfect strangers, an eligible woman and an eligible man. And they're already fighting. Because she's not making a space in her life for being other. She is already pegged. All these men are punishing her. All these men are alike, and they're out to hurt her and aren't willing to marry her. And nobody's going to marry her because all these men are mean, evil people. But we do this all the time. We're just not aware. We also have to create a space in our life for being someone who is not only other than our personality, our dreams, anyone we've ever experienced, other than our parents. This is a major, major challenge for people because they tend to project their parents on people they meet. And there's a very interesting book called Getting the Love You Want by a fellow named Hendricks. And he's got a very interesting argument. He developed something called imago therapy. Imago coming from the word image. And his theory is quite simple, that we grow up with a basic image of the male and female in our lives. It's the male and female caretaker in our life. It could be our mother and father, it could be our sister, brother, uncle, but whoever played that role of the archetypical male or the archetypical female, that is what we have in our minds. So his belief is that, how is it that people fall in love? How is it that people have this automatic, sometimes, this automatic, almost immediate connection where, you know, Cupid is shot his arrow, you know, and has taken their heart by surprise? It's because in essence, they saw the imago. That really this person that they've met has similarities, or they're projecting similarities of their parents. It's familiar, and they fall in love because this person is the archetypical male or female, the male or female that they are familiar with. He says it's very common then that people essentially end up marrying people that are very much like their parents. But what's interesting is, he says, that you end up marrying people like your parents, both in the positive sense, but unfortunately, very much in the negative sense. In fact, it shocks us suddenly. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I married someone who's just like my mother. Everything I hated about my mother. Now, people find themselves often doing that, he claims. And his point is that in a deep, deep sense, we have wanted to fix our mother and father, and we're trying to do it through our spouse. Now, Judaism acknowledges that really we've come into this world to fix. And if we can do that, if that's the way it happens, then that's the way it happens. But it's important that a person be so careful, because what you can end up doing is project again on your spouse or your potential spouse the stuff with your parents. That if your parents were cold people, then suddenly when this person you're dating shows even a small percentage of a little bit of a coldness or a little lack of emotion, suddenly there we go. He's exactly like. And this becomes again the challenge. Love is creating a space for a being other than yourself, created in the image of God just like you. The image of God is absolute uniqueness. You have to create a space in your life for someone who's other than what you are familiar with. Because this person is not familiar. This person is not your parents. In fact, it says in the Torah that a man shall leave his mother and father and cleave to his spouse, so they shall become one flesh. You have to leave your mother and father. It's not just talking about leaving their home. It's not just talking about leaving the dependency on them financially. It's talking about psychologically leaving them. You have to leave your parents, not just psychological dependence. I would suggest this verse also teaches us to leave our parents and whatever baggage we have with our parents, whatever stuff, whatever hurt we have with our parents, and not pass it over to our spouse. And this is a very big challenge. And indeed, for love to not only be alive, but also well every day, then we have to also make a space in our lives for someone who was other than who they were yesterday. The power of forgiveness. To be so careful that your relationship with your spouse or your potential spouse today, partner today, is not based on who they were yesterday. That you don't assume they can do tshuva. People can change. I must have shared with you the story. I was working with a couple who were actually in their late 70s. And teaching them Torah, Kabbalah. And one day he takes me aside and tells me, you know, Rabbi, you know what bugs me about my wife? She doesn't know how to forgive. She doesn't know how to forgive. And he begins to tell me a story of how she doesn't know how to begin. And I asked her, well, when did that happen? 30 years ago. He tells me a story that happened 30 years ago. Later on, I'm hanging out with his wife, talking a little bit, and she takes me aside. She says, you know what, Rabbi? You know what really annoys me about my husband? He does not know how to ask for forgiveness. He does not know how to ask for forgiveness. And I was like, can you imagine this? And she begins to tell me the exact same story 30 years ago. Imagine holding on to this garbage for so long. Recently, a friend shared with me such an incredible wisdom. A teacher stood up and he held a cup of water. And he asked the class, tell me, how heavy is this water? So one kid says, 50 grams. Another kid says, maybe 60 grams. And the teacher said, its weight depends on how long you hold it. If you hold it for 5 minutes, it's not so heavy. But imagine you have to hold this for a day. Wow, how heavy it would be. Why do we make our lives so heavy? Because we hold on to stuff that at the time really didn't weigh much, but because we held on to it for so long, it just became so much heavier and heavier and heavier. So this is the art of making room in your life. You're not only looking for a soulmate, you're looking for a roommate. A roommate means you have to be able to create room in your life for someone who is other than yourself, other than anyone else you ever knew, other than anyone you dreamed you would have married, other than who your parents were, other than what you're familiar with, other than even who you experienced them to be yesterday. Today we are created anew and anew. The possibility for change is always there. Before you can create a space for someone other than yourself, you have to create a space in your life for the otherness that you are of yourself. Other than what you dreamed you would have been, other than what your parents thought you were supposed to be, other than what society claims you've got to be, other than you were sure you'd be by now, right? So really, love is this circle Because to love, it says, "La'avta'recha kamocha," you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Well, that puts me in a difficult situation, because essentially it means I have to love myself before I can love my neighbor. So therefore, what I've just described in terms of moving yourself out of center, creating a space for other, I would suggest that we actually have to do that very same process for ourselves, making a space in our lives for other. You know, one of my friends shared with me, a rabbi had asked him to really embrace his inner child that he is really divorced from. He has not embraced the little inner child that he hasn't made space for in his own life. So, you know, it's a long process. It's going to have to be very long, but a person's constantly afraid they're going to make the wrong choice. Now, they have to understand, there's no such thing as a wrong choice. That's the first thing. There's never a wrong choice. There's just choices. And when you make that choice, and you work hard in making that choice work, if after working hard it doesn't work, so then you make a new choice. Does that mean that the last choice was the wrong choice? No, maybe that was the choice that precisely needed to precede this choice. So it's really a mind game that sabotages people, called the right choice and the wrong choice, and then I freak as I sit on the fence. And you know, it hurts your rear end when you sit on a fence, because you're so afraid, this choice, that choice. And you know what? Sometimes you just gotta make a choice. And the reason why it's hard for people to make choices is because they're really not trying to make a choice. They're really trying to come to a conclusion. They're hoping that 1 + 1 will be 2, and that somehow they can find the equation that will work for this woman or for this man. And therefore, they really, once again, have deluded themselves that they're really trying to make a choice, when that's really not what they're trying to do. They're trying to come to a conclusion. And they can never come to a conclusion, because there's too many variables that they simply don't know, and they will not know until they're married. And even after they're married, they won't know and can't know until maybe they'll have children. Won't know or can't know until they do really well in business or fail at business, or what do we know? So therefore, people put really run away from the courage of making choices. I hope that was helpful. The real problem here is there's no such thing as a right choice or a wrong choice. There's just making the choice and working at that choice to make it work. And if after you put that effort it didn't work, well, so then you make a new choice. In addition to that, it's the reason why people are stymied in their choices is because they're really trying to make a conclusion. And they're not trying to make a choice, because a choice is an element of a leap. It doesn't have to be a leap across the Grand Canyon, but let's call it a skip hop of faith. And added to that, you know, you are responsible to make a reasonable choice, but it can only be reasonable. It can't be a certain conclusion. So you ask friends, you get opinions, and then you got to take the leap. Otherwise, you'll just be running around the bottom of the mountain and never getting anywhere. I want to further explore this next point. You see, the challenge of love, just as it's reflected in parallels to the process as described by the Kabbalah, is this creating the space for otherness. But I also said that you're creating a space for an other that is flawed. And that is, I think, one of the biggest, amongst the major challenges for people to make that commitment, is they really are looking for someone perfect. And there's just no such person as perfect. Everybody has problems. Everybody has problems. Now, some problems are a lot more serious than others, and one needs to be realistic with themselves, how much they're willing to swallow and how much can they take. But I don't need you to love me for what's good about me. I love me for what's good about me. I need you to love me for what's bad about me. That's where love comes in. Unconditional love means that I am making a space to love someone who has conditions that challenge love, right? Otherwise, if all the conditions fit, that wouldn't be unconditional love, right? That wouldn't be unconditional love. And so people are looking for Mr. Right or Miss Right, and there's really no such person. And when people find them, it's only because they have really, I think, deluded themselves. Because everybody's got a problem. Everybody's got a hidden side. Not necessarily are they hiding it from you intentionally. It might be hidden from themselves. And we are complicated human beings. We are complicated. The Talmud says that God created Adam and Eve straight, but they wanted complications. We tend to be complicated. We look for complications. Sometimes we even think that the complicated is more sophisticated. And but this is the problem, that as soon as people hear that there are problems, they think it's a problem. That's not a problem. That's exactly when love really happens. Now again, there's problems and there's problems. You know, recently I was speaking to a fellow who was very close to getting engaged to a woman. She had shared with him that she was on medication, that she has depression issues. But as they were getting closer, she decided that she really wanted him to know her other side. So she came to the date without medication. And it was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. This was not just a person who had depression. This was a person who literally had split personality. And he couldn't go through with it. Now, this is a very interesting scenario. I don't know if I would have been different. But I wonder why she felt a need to show that other face, when that's the reason why she takes medication, which is to help her to go on. But sometimes people have this way of wanting to sabotage and begin to show all their dirty laundry within the first couple of dates even. I want you to know, I snore at night. I mean, like, who cares? You know, like, of course I don't want to marry someone who snores because I don't know you, but if I knew you, then, you know, snoring might be a very, very small dark dot in a huge, gorgeous painting of love that could happen between us. So, you know, so on the other hand, although I am sharing that, there's nobody perfect. Our scriptures teach us, ain't tzaddik ba'aretz she'ein chotel. There's no such thing as a tzaddik, a righteous person that was in this world that does not err. Of course, we all make mistakes, right? So there's no such thing as a flawless person. And if we met a flawless person, they'd make us feel horrible with ourselves. Who wants a flawless person? The real actualization of love is that you could love this person, right? This person, and you love their light and you love their darkness. You know, if your spouse can say to you, I love even your darkness. Wow, that's really love. Now, what would they mean by that? And I share that because that's what my wife said to me one day. I love even your darkness. Now, don't get me wrong here. I don't have much darkness. No, but when she said that, I was shocked. Like, what does that mean? You know, aren't we supposed to hide the darkness from the people we love because we don't want to, God forbid, challenge their love? We don't want to undermine their love? Well, then we don't believe in the power of love. And my wife explained, I said, but how could you love my darkness? She said, because it's part of you. It's like looking at a painting. You know, you can't love the painting and say, but I love the bright colors, but I don't love the dark colors. It's part of the painting. It's what makes you unique. And the truth is, it's really our problems that become the source of much of our energy, much of our creativity, much of our drive is really rooted in our problems. You're not going to find a mountain that doesn't have a valley next to it. It just comes together, you know? It just comes together. You can't say you want a person who's really organized and then get upset that they're very pedantic and meticulous and critical. Of course, they're organized. These are people who have attention to detail. So if you want a person who really has attention to detail, and they're going to really keep this incredibly beautiful home, well, they're also going to pay attention to detail in you, right? So, you know, their darkness is part of their light, and their light is part of their darkness. And so people come to dating or enter into marriage with this delusion that they don't have to make this space. But okay, I'm making space for being other than myself. Okay, they're other than my personality. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, they're other than my parents. Okay, fine, fine, fine. But you know what? You need to make a space for a being who is other and flawed. Because we all have problems. And that's why, in fact, we're getting married. If I didn't have problems, if I didn't need help, if I didn't need a partner, if I thought I could do it alone, then I don't know how quick people would get married. Right? So it's making a space for someone who is flawed. It's making a space for problems. I shared recently in New York, you know, people used to come to my wife for counseling and dating, and since my wife was quite a good astrologist, you know, she doesn't do this anymore, so people would ask her to compare the astrological map. Because when you put the maps together, you can see if there's what's called squares, where there'll be points of tension and conflict. And my wife would never do that. She said, well, but maybe that's exactly what God wants. And maybe it's precisely from those places of conflict will emerge the greatest light of love. In fact, it's the problems in a marriage that can turn into the real glue. Because that's when we have the opportunity to really love each other unconditionally. That's when we have the opportunity to really demonstrate the miraculous healing powers of love. And therefore, when we enter into a relationship, if we think it's going to be a merry-go-round, then it will be a boring relationship. There's no relationship that I know that's a merry-go-round. Relationships are roller coasters. And some people, you know, as they're going down, they lift their hands up and go, whee! Some people hold on tight until their knuckles turn blue. But then don't go on roller coasters. It's a roller coaster. That's what it's about. And when you know what you're on, you enjoy it. But imagine you were told that you're going on a merry-go-round, and you really put on a roller coaster. I mean, wouldn't that be hell? But if you knew it was a roller coaster, then you could enjoy it. And you know what? My experience is that very often this is the source of our problems. That we think we're on a merry-go-round when we're on a roller coaster. And if we would just make that switch of perception and say, ah, this is a roller coaster, it's a whole different experience, and we can enjoy that too. So the Kabbalah teaches us that God made a space in, so to speak, his presence, his light, for a vessel other than himself. This vessel was flawed, wasn't able to receive this light. And this vessel broke down, and already, within the first second, there is chaos, conflict, problems. But that's when love really can happen.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.